but be invited to live it. Amen. That's a perfect anthem, by the way, very much attuned to Mark's gospel. But the phrase, "Open my heart, Lord, that I shall see." Wonderful. Here's a story in Mark. The community of believers and disciples are approaching the suburbs of Jerusalem. No doubt near Jericho, because Jericho was the last stop en route to the city of David. The road out of town represented the final 15 miles of the pilgrim's journey to the city. It was a standard thoroughfare for much of that city's beggars. So Bartimaeus was not alone, I'm sure. The odds are pretty good that pilgrims making the journey to Jerusalem would have been people of means. That pilgrims making, people on the side of the road would have expected and gotten some kind of gifts or some kind of offerings or alms. It was on that road that Jesus, the disciples, and we're told the great crowd, met up with the blind Bartimaeus, the destitute blind man. This is the last miracle in the series for the gospel writer Mark. The scholars agree that unlike the healing at Bethesda, the Bartimaeus healing is known as one of those paradigmatic stories of discipleship. It is Bartimaeus who uses the title Jesus, Son of David, illustrating a struggle, a political struggle and religious struggle over the ideology of popular kingship. If you were Matthew telling this story, there would be no question that Jesus is the Son of David and the King. And he brings a message of kingdom building. But we're in Mark. In Mark, there is a struggle over whether Jesus is to be called the King of the Jews or his title is, more appropriately, the Messiah. So the structure of this episode emphasizes not the action or the teaching of Jesus, but the struggle of Bartimaeus to regain his sight, complicated by the fickleness of the crowd and disciples. So here's how it looks to me. Bartimaeus cries out. But the crowd and the disciples both rebuke him because, after all, he's just another beggar. So Bartimaeus cries out louder. And Jesus hears him and says, "Go get him." So the disciples go over and say to Bartimaeus, all right. You've been loud enough. He obviously hears you, so he wants to see you. And Bartimaeus is taken by that fact and so caught up in it that he throws off his outer cloak and he runs in the direction of Jesus' words because, remember, he can't see. So for this gospel writer, the fact is Bartimaeus has heard of Jesus, and in that moment, he has the hope that Jesus is who he has heard him to be and will heal him. And whatever the crowd or the disciples think about his class of people, Bartimaeus believes what they say they believe, that Jesus heals. Don't miss another point. Jesus' question to Bartimaeus is the same one he asked his disciples earlier in Mark's gospel. In fact, same chapter. The question is, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, when Jesus asked the disciples earlier, you'll remember that James and John asked for some kind of guarantee. They said, "Look, Lord, when we're in eternity, how about James and I be on your right and left hand? Kind of the VIPs. Totally, totally different way that Jesus answers it. But when Bartimaeus is asked by Jesus, what do you want me to do for you? He simply says, my vision. My vision. The one Jesus cannot grant earlier, and the other he can grant. It is a beggar who has the courage and faith to ask for that which Jesus can give. And so often we, as they, as the disciples, as crowds in those days, ask Jesus to give us things that are reserved for God. The implication is clear. Only if the disciples and we struggle against the forces that render us deaf and mute and blind, only if we come to terms with our seemingly unquenchable thirst for power and prestige, only if we recognize that we are in need of vision and insight, will this adventure we call the Christian life have a home in us. In the 5th century, there was a Syrian named Dionysius who used this paradoxical phrase, a ray of darkness. I'm intrigued by that phrase. It had a lasting influence until at least the late 17th century, that period after which, on the whole, Western Europe succumbed to a collective amnesia about the meaning of the word God. It's a paradoxical phrase. A ray of darkness. Much later, the Welsh poet Henry Vaughan wrote these equally intriguing lines in the same vein. There is in God, some say, a deep but dazzling darkness. Unforgettable lines. But Dionysius is saying something more than the poet. To him, God's ray of darkness interrupts our blindness and our ignorance. It cuts through something as if a beam of light. God is, we say, the light of the world in his Son Jesus. Yet that interruption, that light cutting through darkness is not a comfortable clearing up of our problems or smoothing out of difficulties or upsets. On the contrary, it brings on a kind of vertigo. It shakes us up. May question some of the things we have taken for granted in life. May mean you and I have to find new ways of knowing ourselves, of our motivations, of our aspirations, of our convictions, of our ethics. This ray of darkness has caused me to try to imagine new ways of expressing myself. I never, in 39 years of ministry, I must say that I truly am still learning, still questioning how to identify myself, how to utter myself, how to talk of myself, how to image myself. In short, when God's light breaks into my darkness, the first thing which I know is that I don't know everything I thought I knew. And God invades me. Hasn't this happened to you in some way? Those moments when you experienced a breakthrough, or perhaps even a breakdown. I obviously don't know what those moments have been like for you, but haven't you had those moments of fulfillment or assurance that have shaken you? Changed you? Changed the way you see something? They are almost like moments of intolerable joy. I've had artist friends try to describe those moments to me. They talk about the darkness, the times they can't write, they can't paint, they can't draw, they can't play, they can't compose music. And then a moment comes, and they draw, and they write, or they play with seemingly reckless abandon. Lee Jacoby reminded me before we came in this morning, Handel wrote the Messiah in 21 days. I can't even imagine that. But it's not just these great people who have done great things. I heard from a colleague this last week who called me. He's had a tough year. And he called me and introduced the call by saying, "Tom, I've had an epiphany." I didn't recognize his voice right away, so I said, "Well, great, who is it?" Incredible. Struggling with an issue in his life, and suddenly, wow, I've had an epiphany. Now, when clergy have epiphanies, that's pretty great, because I think clergy think they are epiphanies. Likewise, my oldest son called me this week and said, "Dad, I have figured it out." He's gone through a tough time. To hear that call was light in my life, and in his. Can you imagine the moment those scientists who made the announcement a couple weeks ago, working in a lab for years and endless testing, with doubt about the clarity of what they were doing, suddenly announced, "We have mapped the genome." Incredible. A veil lifted. Well, like the disciples, we might first think these are moments that establish a new sense of power or something that we grab rather than that comes to us. But I doubt it. I would argue that these are moments of attunement. They're moments of attunement with the rhythm of things, of life, of the eternal. They are moments when what we are experiencing out there ends up in here. They may be points of intense intimacy or communion with another person. They may be points of apparently unbridgeable distance between you and someone else. And suddenly, the clouds lift. It is after these sort of moments when people sometimes say, "I've seen God." They don't mean they've really seen the face of God. If they tell you that, you might want to check them into a facility. But certainly Bartimaeus at that moment could say, "I have seen God." I do believe if he were here in the sanctuary this morning, he would say that. His life was interrupted, turned upside down. His faithfulness was put into question, not because of his lack of it, but because of his lack of social status. This was not a reward for faithfulness. We misread this if we see that in this text. Bartimaeus was not being rewarded for faithfulness. He was being rewarded. He was being helped, healed, and shown a new way of looking at life because God, his belief in God and God's power, was affirmed. You know, remember, just prior to this passage, Jesus has his right-hand men next to him, And Jesus does what Jesus always seems to be doing according to Mark. He chooses to perform a miracle on the least and the lost, not on the greatest and the most righteous. To talk about specific moments or points is probably misleading, because sometimes it's a daily ritual that we do. In fact, what we do here every week in worship, we practice, we do liturgy, we read the scripture, we get ourselves attuned and on the edge of discovery. And if it comes in these moments, in this hour, then wonderful. But it may not. It may come during the week. In a way, all serious prayer and religious practice and ritual should be the discipline designed in some degree to keep us on the edge of discovery. Just to attune us so that when those moments come, we will recognize them. And what is that discovery? Well, that I and my world, my regularities and my securities are always being made provisional. I think all Christians struggle as we struggle. Some days in darkness, and our disciplines help us, they stop us, and they help us to take ourselves less seriously and to take God more seriously. To get ourselves out of the center of the universe and refine us for higher purposes. In Mark's gospel, in fact, all the gospels, if they reveal anything to us, it is that God is the crucible of divine creative darkness, breaking through it. So much so that it forces our defensive egos out of their safe places. These are the marks of God wherever they happen. Sickness, ecstasy, madness, intuition, speechlessness, blindness. God makes the world new. And sometimes makes me strange to myself, forcing me to see myself participating in a world seemingly uncontrollable flux. This is God. This is one who escapes my grasp and often my vision. But we Christians do have a couple more things to say here. One, we believe that what happens in our experiences with God happens repeatedly and with deepening intensity in the stories like that of Bartimaeus. Until those stories, caught so vividly in the Gospels, reform a whole religious vocabulary for us. We believe we are the benefactors and the participants in that reformation even today. We are being challenged as never before. As never before. I think our culture is at such odds with itself that we as human beings tend to bring that culture into the church instead of bringing the gospel out to the world. We must also understand that what is it we believe? That this person, Jesus, assumed the right to declare on God's behalf that he would encounter any darkness of those who couldn't cope with God or the world or themselves. And that he accepted even this as a sign of God's presence and determination to communicate with us in word and in deed, in miracle and in healing, in sadness and in joy, to constantly invite us to see. And secondly, the kingdom of heaven that he sees, that he lived in, that he lives out, is not a threat. That some of our more theologically conservative brothers and sisters would have us believe it is not a threat. The kingdom of heaven is not a threat except to those who are already frightened by their own humanity and struggle to control it tightly by law and by institution. The kingdom of heaven is a promise to those who are alive to their own vulnerability, those open to having their eyes and their ears and their hearts checked each week. That's what happens here. Each week, we check out our hearts, our vulnerabilities, our eyes and our ears. The kingdom of heaven is a promise to those of us who are willing to admit that we too often are also poor in spirit and blind. When we get it, we stop taking for granted that the world revolves around us, and we become more willing to question. We become more clear in our purpose. We become more equilibrium. We discover a harmony utterly unconnected to the way the world is presently living and being. We experience a ray of darkness as a dart of love. Jesus was willing to leave himself, his nature, his calling, his mission, as a question in the new language that his disciples slowly needed to learn to speak. And my friends, we are still trying to get that language straight. Here is one of those fundamental things that I have learned over the years about theological nitpicking, which my colleagues spend way too much time on. I tell them, spend time on pastoral ministry. The theology will come. But here's one of those fundamental things that I've learned. You and I can learn to live with the unsettling questions about God and about the divine human encounter, so caught up in Jesus because of his deepest assurance. Because in the Christian church, which affirms a resurrection, the darkness of the cross is a promise. Beyond our failure to comprehend it and completely understand it, and beyond the timidity of our faith. The story of Bartimaeus is a story of a person who understands that faith does not work miracles. No amount of your faith is going to work a miracle. But God will. He knew Jesus had the strength of God. And in that moment, he concentrated on the strength of God. He experienced his own life of social disgrace, his life of darkness, woven together in a moment of grace and promise. And when Jesus said to him, "Your faith in God has healed you," Bartimaeus threw off his cloak as if to say, "I have seen God." May it continually be so for you, that you continue to gain insight and sight from studying and living out the stories of God.